Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1097, Fascism, 2019 World Tour Part 7, subtitled Azov on Our Mind, Part 3. This is being recorded on November 5th of the year 2019. We are continuing our world tour and a look at fascism around the world, and specifically in Ukraine. This is a sequel to For the Record 1073, and our last broadcast, 1096, talking about the Azov Battalion and related topics. We are going to continue with a reading of an article from Balkan Insight blog of July 18th of 2019. This is by Michael Colburn, C-O-L-B-O-R-N-E, Croatia, Key to Ukrainian Far Right's International Ambitions. And we have been talking about not only the Azov Battalion, but their networking with Croatian fascists, neo-Ustashi, so to speak, and the plans of Azov, including Croatian neo-Ustashi, to form something of a foreign region. Beyond that, Azov, which has many different manifestations, a national core, a civil militia that has police powers in 31 different Ukrainian cities, they're part of the Ukrainian military, and with tremendous influence in quote, new unquote Ukraine. The Azov has an intermarium conference, and that is including, apparently, elements in Croatia, continuing from where we left off and overlapping slightly. In September, Azov is taking the Intermarium Conference on the road for the first time to Sellers, Zagreb. Intermarium, or Between the Seas, is a regional security concept first touted by Poland's post-World War I leader Józef Piłsudski in the early 1930s. Kiev-based researcher Alexandra Wishart, W-I-S-H-A-R-T, said Azov had given the idea new life, promoting it as a, quote, springboard, unquote, to build an East European federation of right-wing nationalist ethno-states, unquote, free from what Azov perceives as the cultural Marxism, unquote, of the EU and the neo-Bolshevism of Russia. Wishart, a graduate student at the University of Glasgow and National University of Kiev, Morila Academy, said Croatia was central to Azov's plans. Croatia is a key player within the Balkans and central enough to help neutralize Russian or EU influence there, said Wishart, who attended the October 2018 Intermarium Conference in Kiev as an observer. Soler, that's Denis Soler, who fought with the Croatian neo-Ustashi during the Balkans Wars in the early 90s and then fought with Azov as well during the ongoing civil war there. Denis Soler confirmed Zagreb would host the Intermarium Conference, bringing together delegates from Ukraine, Poland, the Baltic states, Norway, Denmark, and Sweden, he said. It will be a chance to cement developing ties between the Azov and the Croatian sovereignists, an alliance of far-right parties which came a surprise third in Croatia in European parliamentary elections in May with 8.5% of the vote. The alliance has one MP in the Croatian parliament but is polling at almost 6% with parliamentary elections due next year. The alliance's sole member of the European Parliament is Ruza Ruza Tomasic, T-O-M-A-S-I-C, a former police officer who left socialist Yugoslavia for Canada at age 15 and recently made headlines in Croatia when photographs were published showing her in fascist uniform while living in Canada and apparently glorifying Croatian World War II fascist leader Ante Pavelec. Tomasic told the Croatian journalist that she was, quote, not ashamed of this, but that she did not, quote, stand by some of these things today, unquote. In the January social media post, an account run by Semyonaka, that's Ms. Semyonaka, who is the, Olena Semyonaka, is in charge basically of outreach for the Azov Battalion. In a January social media post, an account run by Semyonaka said that, quote, the coalition of Croatian nationalist parties is taking shape side by side with the progress in the preparation for the next Intermarium conference by Croatian and Ukrainian enthusiasts. So there said the guest of honor would be Andrei Bilevsky, leader of Azov's political wing, the National Corps, and an MP in the Ukrainian parliament, which he entered in 2014 as an independent. Semyonaka did not confirm the visit. Bilevsky previously headed the openly Nazi Patriot of Ukraine organization and spent 28 months in prison on attempted murder charges. Never tried, he was released and the charges were dropped under a parliamentary decree on political prisoners, unquote, in 2014, following the revolution on the Maidan. Bilevsky has made the Intermarium concept part of the official geopolitical doctrine, unquote, of the National Corps. One more time. Bilevsky has made the Intermarium concept part of the official geopolitical doctrine, unquote, of the National Corps. Soler said the purpose of Bilevsky's visit was to meet representatives of Croatia's right wing, particularly members of the Sovereignists. Tomasic initially said she was unaware of any planned visit from Bilevsky, but then appeared to contradict herself and told BIRN that a Croatian man whose name she did not recall had approached her regarding a planned visit to Zagreb by Bilevsky that would include a meeting with Ruza Tomasic and other Sovereignist politicians. I said, fine, I'm willing to talk to anybody, Tomasic said, but denied having anything to do with organizing the trip or the Intermarium conference. Some Sovereignists, however, are less coy about their relationship with Azov. Sumich, a far-right author and translator who ran unsuccessfully for the European Parliament on behalf of the Sovereignists, told BIRN that he plans to attend the Intermarium conference and that he is in regular communication with Semyonaka. Denis Bavanda, B-E-V-A-N-D-A, Secretary General of the Croatian Conservative Party, one of the main parties within the Sovereignists, shared a photo on Instagram earlier this year of himself alongside Denis Soler of the Azov. The post referred to the Azov Battalion in English and Ukrainian and declared Slava Ukraini, or Long Live Ukraine, the battle cry of the OUN during World War II, and of protesters during the 2014 revolution, and now an official greeting of the Ukrainian army. Note the previous somewhat equivocal post from Bellingcat. Continuing. Croatian French nationalist author Yuri Vucic, seventh on the Sovereignists Party list for the European Parliament, participated in a conference in Zagreb in December of 2017, co-hosted by Semyonaka and Leo Maric, M-A-R-I-C, of Croatian identitarian group Generation Renewal, unquote. The headline announcement of the September conference, however, will likely be the creation of what Azov calls its Foreign Legion. While details remain vague, Azov, in its social media post, has suggested that such a force will facilitate foreigners wishing to join its fight in eastern Ukraine. BIRN has discovered that in February of last year, a user of the voice and text app Discord, which has invite-only chat rooms and became popular with white supremacists and neo-Nazis before the app was hit by a series of leaks, wrote that Azov, quote, will have the Foreign Legion set up within the next 18 months or so. BIRN scoured hundreds of thousands of leaked Discord messages and found no shortage of Azov devotees. One user on the white supremacist site Stormfront mused that, quote, the National Socialist Revolution may begin in Ukraine. The following month, March of 2018, in an interview with a member of the neo-Nazi Nordic Resistance Movement, Semyonaka said the Ukrainian government was hindering Azov efforts to bring in foreign recruits for the war against the Russian-backed rebels. But in the future, we hope to create a foreign legion. There, we could announce loud and clear when we seek volunteers, unquote. Semyonaka, after initially replying to a request for comment, did not reply to further communication. Almost 18 months on, the unit may be about to take shape in Zagreb. Bruno Zorica, or Zorica, Z-O-R-I-C-A, a retired Croatian army officer and former member of the French Foreign Legion, has been repeatedly mentioned in Azov social media posts as a key figure in the unit's creation. Known by his nom de guerre Zulu, Zorica commanded the Frankopan Battalion, a special forces unit of the Croatian army during the country's war against Belgrade-backed Serb rebels as the Socialist Yugoslav Federation disintegrated in the early 1990s. With other veterans of the French Foreign Legion, Zorica trained Croatian army recruits during the war, telling the Washington Post in 1971, quote, we teach these recruits war is not Rambo movies. My people have a much lower casualty rate in fighting than the others. They know when to fight and when to dig in, unquote. In 2001, Zorica was arrested in a police operation against a suspected arms smuggling ring. While there is no record of Zorica ever being charged or convicted of any crime, media reports at the time said the former legionnaire was suspected of heading up an arms smuggling ring that allegedly transported the equivalent of more than 1 million euros of arms from Croatia into the European Union, especially France. Azov's social media accounts has said Zorica has, quote, promised to assist the development of the Ukrainian Foreign Legion, unquote, and that, again quoting, cooperation is promised to reach a new level, unquote. After initially agreeing to speak to BIRN, Zorica postponed a planned interview, then failed to show up, and eventually stopped communicating. In October of 2018, Zorica spoke at the last Infirmarium conference in Kiev, saying he was, quote, in close communication, unquote, with the head of Azov's military school, quote, we are ready to share our experience and knowledge with the Ukrainian military, he said. And we're going to come back to the Infirmarium concept, which in addition to the Azov orientation toward and iteration of, is in fact something that appears to be gaining momentum, not only in neo-unquote Nazi circles, but in various halls of government as well, in the U.S. and abroad. We are going to be tackling the concept of the Infirmarium and the geopolitical position of Ukraine in the Earth Island and some of the implications of that in a couple of weeks. Maybe we'll begin with that next week. But we are going to be looking at some more elements of international outreach between Ukrainian fascism and the Azov Battalion in particular, and, quote, lone wolves, unquote, including here in the U.S. A couple of Army soldiers, one of whom apparently fought in Ukraine before joining the Army, have been arrested by the FBI on allegations of planning terrorist violence. And they have links with the Azov Battalion and other Ukrainian fascist formations. I would note that, as we discussed in For the Record Program 1084, Brent Tarrant, the Australian national, who apparently committed the mosque shootings in Christchurch, New Zealand, have also, according to the aforementioned Sufan Center, traveled to Ukraine and trained or received training from the Azov Battalion.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
More about some of the international networking that involves the Azov Battalion. This is from Vice News of September 23rd of 2019. This is by Tess, P-E-S-S-O-N, O-W-E-N. The FBI just arrested a U.S. Army soldier on charges of plotting to bomb a major news network. The FBI arrested a member of the U.S. Army who allegedly plotted to bomb a major news network and shared bomb-making information online. Jarrett William Smith, a 24-year-old soldier stationed at Fort Riley, Kansas, was charged with one count of distributing information related to explosives and weapons of mass destruction. As early as 2016, he also discussed joining the thousands of men traveling to Ukraine to fight alongside the far-right paramilitary group Azov Battalion, according to the FBI. Quote, "This is a Middle East-style bomb that, if big enough or connected to the right explosive, can damage or destroy U.S. military vehicles," unquote, Smith told an undercover FBI agent of car bombs, according to court documents. Quote, "Most of the time, it can obliterate civilian vehicles and people nearby," unquote. Smith had risen to the level of private first-class infantry soldier since joining the Army in June of 2017. If convicted on the current charges, he could get up to 20 years in federal prison and a maximum fine of $250,000. After joining the military, Smith connected with an American man on Facebook who had already traveled to Ukraine between 2017 and 2019 to fight with a group similar to Azov, according to the FBI. The man positioned himself as Smith's mentor and was helping him prepare to travel to Ukraine. Court documents include excerpts of a Facebook conversation between Smith, the American man, and others from October of 2018, after Smith had enlisted in the Army. In the conversation, Smith brags about his ability to transform cell phones into explosive devices, quote, "in the style of Afghans," unquote. He then provides them instructions about how to do it. On August 19th, Smith unwittingly spoke with an undercover FBI agent online and told him that he was hoping to meet like-minded, quote, radicals, unquote, and aspired to kill members of Antifa. He was also considering targeting cell towers or a local news station, according to court documents. Days later, he'd settled on his chosen target. He wanted to attack the headquarters of a major American news network using a car bomb. The court documents don't reveal which network he wanted to target. Then, last Friday, he talked to an undercover agent on Telegram and discussed specifics on how to build a car bomb. By the way, correction, in my last show I characterized Telegram as the UK paper. Now this is a social media app. Continuing, Smith was arrested over the weekend and admitted to FBI agents that he knows how to make explosive devices and routinely provides instruction on how to build those devices online. He admitted that he provides this information even to individuals who tell them they intend to use the information to cause harm to others, unquote, one FBI agent wrote. Quote, Smith stated that he did this to cause, quote, chaos, unquote. He told me that if chaos results in the death of people, even through information he provided, it doesn't affect him, unquote. Smith's arrest comes only days after the Department of Homeland Security formally recognized white nationalism as a serious national security threat and unveiled a new counterterrorism strategy to combat it. Since April, Congress has held 7 hearings about the now global threat. Earlier this month, former FBI agent Ali Soufan, who runs the global security firm the Soufan Center, testified that 17,000 foreigners, including from the U.S., have traveled to Ukraine in recent years to gain paramilitary skills there. They fought alongside far-right groups like Azov and were returning home with those new skills. Smith's case is yet another example of how current and former U.S. service members have allegedly been recruited or radicalized by far-right extremists. Several members of the U.S. military were outed earlier this year as members of Identity Europa, a white nationalist group that cultivates a preppy aesthetic in an effort to go mainstream. In another case, a Coast Guard lieutenant and former Marine was allegedly plotting a large-scale attack against Democratic lawmakers and journalists. He was arrested earlier this year on gun and drug charges. And active duty service members were found to be involved with Atomwaffen, a violent neo-Nazi group. By the way, an active duty National Guardsman was connected to apparent links to attack a nuclear power plant in Florida. And more about the aforementioned William Jarrett Smith. This from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty of September 26th of 2019. Former U.S. soldier who fought with Ukrainian far-right militia wanted for U.S. murder, this by Mike Eckel and Christopher Miller, again of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. A former U.S. Army soldier who fought for a far-right Ukrainian paramilitary group and who has been linked to a bomb plot in the U.S. has been detained in Ukraine on charges related to a double murder last year. Craig Lang, L-A-N-G, is one of 2 Army veterans implicated in the 2018 murder of a couple, according to a criminal complaint filed in U.S. District Court in Florida, where the killing occurred. The case is one of a growing number of former... The case is one of a growing number involving former U.S. veterans and U.S.-based extremists and white supremacist groups who have cultivated ties with Ukrainian right-wing groups in recent years. Lang, who was being held in a jail in central Ukraine as of September 26th, has also been linked to another U.S. soldier who was arrested on September 21st in Kansas and who had asked Lang for help traveling to Ukraine to fight for another paramilitary group. That soldier, Jarrett William Smith, is expected to make an initial court appearance in the Kansas federal court on September 26th. According to the Florida criminal complaint, Lang and another former U.S. Army soldier, Alex Zweifelhofer, Zweifelhofer, were accused of robbing the Florida couple in 2018 and then killing them in an effort to get money to travel to Venezuela to, quote, participate in an armed conflict against the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela, unquote. The complaint said in September of 2016, as Zweifelhofer was returning to the U.S., that he told agents from the FBI and U.S. Customs that both he and Lang had fought in Ukraine with a group called Right Sector. Originally an alliance of ultranationalist groups that formed during the Euromaidan protests in November of 2013, Right Sector transformed into a volunteer fighting battalion after Russia fomented a separatist war in eastern Ukraine in April of 2014. The unit quickly earned a reputation for being unruly as they fought alongside Ukrainian government forces. The unit eventually split in two, with one half brought under control of the Defense Ministry and the other remaining an unofficial volunteer group. Zweifelhofer and Lang later traveled to Kenya, where they sought to fight an al-Qaeda-linked terrorist group, al-Shabaab, but they were detained there and deported back to the U.S. The former soldiers were already on the radar of U.S. investigators after they were detained by Kenyan authorities trying to enter South Sudan in 2017, according to the complaint. The Florida complaint said Lang and Zweifelhofer faced charges including conspiracy to commit violence, but not actual murder charges, in the 2018 slaying of the couple in Florida. The complaint, which was unsealed earlier this month in a Florida federal court, said Zweifelhofer was being held in a Wisconsin detention center while Lang was in Ukraine. Ihor Skoritsky, the uncle of Lang's Ukrainian girlfriend in Kiev, who was aiding the American, told RFERL that as of September 26th, Lang was in a jail and awaiting a court hearing in the central Ukrainian city of Vinnytsia. Skritsky said that Lang had spoken to him about the murder case in Florida, quote, but denies any involvement, unquote. Mamuka Mamulashvili, Mamulashvili, who commanded a group of pro-Kiev foreign fighters in the Georgian National Legion and is in touch with Skritsky and Lang's partner, said that Ukrainian border guards detained the American as he was returning from Moldova sometime in the past several weeks. He told Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, that border guards had held Lang due to an international warrant. Mamulashvili said that after leaving Right Sector, Lang joined his legion of foreign fighters. He called Lang, quote, a very good specialist, unquote. Again, quoting, he was not with us for long, but as a soldier, I can't say anything bad about him, unquote, he said. Mamulashvili said that he was unaware of Lang's trouble with Ukrainian and U.S. law enforcement. He said that before fighting with him in eastern Ukraine, the Ukrainian Security Service performed a background check on him. Quote, they didn't see anything wrong with the guy, Mamulashvili said of the service, known as the SBU. He was on a Ukrainian military contract, unquote. In past shows, by the way, we have spoken about the profound links between the SBU and the OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine, including Pravi Sektor, with which Lang and Zweifelhofer apparently fought. Skipping down, Lang's name also appeared in the criminal complaint filed in Kansas earlier this week against Smith. According to those charging documents, Smith, a 24-year-old who had been stationed at a nearby Army base, discussed on Facebook in 2016 and later dates that he was interested in traveling to Ukraine to fight with the Azov Battalion, another paramilitary unit that has fought against Russia-backed separatists and also espouses an ultra-nationalist ideology. Human rights groups have accused the Azov Battalion of committing war crimes. That complaint, said Smith, corresponded with Lang as Smith sought help in traveling to Ukraine. In one conversation dated June 23, 2016, Smith wrote, quote, "No former military experience, but if I cannot find a slot in Ukraine by October, I'll be going into the Army. To fight is what I want to do. I'm willing to listen, learn, and train, but to work on firearms is fine by me, too." According to the complaint, Lang responded, quote, "All right, I'll forward you over to the guy that screens people. He'll most likely add you soon." Also, as a pre-warning, if you come to this unit and the government comes to shut down the unit, you will be asked to fight. You may also be asked to kill certain people who become on the bad graces of certain groups, unquote. One more time. Reading between the lines, this is quite interesting. Also, as a pre-warning, if you come to this unit and the government comes to shut down the unit, you will be asked to fight. You may also be asked to kill certain people who become on the bad graces or in the bad graces of certain groups, unquote. Obviously, between the lines and not very much between the lines, this is a foreshadowing of possible assassination. Assassinations to be committed while working with Pravi Sektor and or Azov. Continuing with the article. Prosecutors also said Smith discussed a plan to kill so-called Antifa activists, militant left-wing activists who often engage in violent opposition to right-wing groups. Smith also described how to build a bomb that could be triggered by using a cell phone. He also allegedly suggested building a car bomb and targeting an unnamed U.S. news network. The issue of U.S. white supremacist organizations being drawn to Ukrainian groups is a concern that was raised by U.S. law enforcement as recently as 2017. That year, the FBI warned that Azov's military wing is, quote, believed to have participated in training and radicalizing United States-based white supremacy organizations, unquote. The statement came as part of a case against a California man who traveled to the Ukrainian capital, Kiev, to participate in a fight club with Ukrainian ultra-nationalists. Hosting fight clubs is part of Azov's outreach to like-minded organizations in the West, as RFERL reported in 2018. The political wing, called National Corps, was founded by the former commander of the Azov Battalion, Andrei Beletsky. It has been labeled by the U.S. State Department as a, quote, nationalist hate group, unquote. And their National Druzhina Militia, the Azov, that is, has police powers in 31 different states.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
And more about the networking between Azov and Ukraine and the fascists around the world. This also from Vice News of July 31st of 2019. Far-right extremists have been using Ukraine's war as a training ground. They're returning home. This by Tim Hume sounds rather like ISIS. 5 years on, Michael Skilt, S-K-I-L-L-T, still doesn't know what exactly made him leave his construction job and his girlfriend to fight in the war in Ukraine. Quote, I've done tons of soul searching, and the more I think about it, the less I know why I came, unquote, the 43-year-old told Vice News. But an undeniable part of the draw was that Ukrainian ultranationalists, many with barely disguised neo-Nazi or white supremacist views, had been a driving force in the revolution. Skilt, at the time a notorious Swedish neo-Nazi with a 20-year history on the extreme right scene, felt compelled to join their fight. Quote, all guys who seek adventure dream about this, to create history, unquote, he said. Skilt missed the revolution, arriving in Kiev a few days after the ouster of President Viktor Yanukovych. Instead, he got a war. A Kremlin-backed separatist movement soon swept across the Donbas, Ukraine's southeastern region bordering Russia. Skilt, who had served for 5 years in Sweden's National Home Guard, signed up to fight with the Azov Battalion, a newly formed far-right militia with deep neo-Nazi ties, and headed for the front lines. Throughout 2014 and 2015, he served as a combat sniper for Azov, fighting in major battles in Mariupol, Marinka, Ilovaisk, and Shirokine. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing those. Quote, I managed to get most of the big ones, unquote, he told Vice News, though he has since disavowed his far-right beliefs, he says he still gets chills when thinking of this time at the front. Quote, this brotherhood which comes when you share life and death, it's a poison. I've never been a drug user, but I can imagine the feeling is pretty much the same, unquote. Skilt is just one of many far-right extremists, estimated the number between the hundreds and the low thousands, who have flocked to eastern Ukraine to take up arms since fighting erupted in 2014. Hailing from across Europe, North and South America, and as far away as Australia, they're drawn by the opportunity to fight alongside other right-wing radicals on either side of the conflict. Many see the battle as a crucial training ground for the defense of white Europe, where they can forge deep international links and gain combat experience they believe will be critical at home. When they return home, they're battle-hardened and more radicalized than ever, researchers say, and often fly below the radar of security services, more focused on the returning jihadi threat. I believe Europe is in great danger, unquote, Alberto Testa, an expert on far-right radicalization at the University of West London, told Vice News. He said eastern Ukraine had become a critical staging ground for the international, quote, white jihad struggle, unquote, of the far right, where extremists could, quote, train for what some would call racial holy war, unquote. Researchers warn that Ukraine is radicalizing far-right foreign fighters in the same way Syria has with jihadis, albeit on a smaller scale, creating a global network of combat-tested extremists who pose a security threat that is now beginning to manifest itself. We're very concerned, unquote, said Molly Saltskog, S-A-L-T-S-K-O-G, an intelligence analyst at strategic consultancy firm the Sufan Group, who has tracked the mobilization of far-right foreign fighters. Quote, you have individuals who are battle-hardened, probably more radicalized than before they left. You have a global network of violent white supremacists who can now easily keep in touch on different platforms and go back home, spread that propaganda, conduct training, or move on to the next fight. Western security services haven't taken the far-right foreign fighter threat seriously enough, said Daniel Kohler, K-O-E-H-L-E-R, director of the German Institute for Radicalization and De-Radicalization Studies, largely because they're overwhelmingly focused on jihadist foreign fighters returning from Syria and Iraq in recent years. It seems that intelligence agencies have not regarded them as even remotely as much of a risk as the jihadist fighters, Kohler told Vice News. But that is slowly starting to change as fighters returning from Ukraine make their presence felt at home. Earlier this month, Italian police investigating a network of far-right radicals who had fought in Ukraine uncovered a massive trove of military-grade weaponry, including an 11-foot air-to-air missile and rocket launchers. Since January, returning foreign fighters displaying separatist flags from the conflict have surfaced in France's violent Yellow Vests protests. In May of 2018, Ukraine convicted a French far-right extremist for plotting a string of terror attacks against targets, including a mosque and a synagogue in France. Authorities said the 27-year-old had been caught attempting to smuggle a huge cache of weapons back to France, and that he had reportedly acquired through militants in the country's battle-scarred east. One more time. Authorities said the 27-year-old had been caught attempting to smuggle a huge cache of weapons back to France that he had reportedly acquired through militants in the country's Ukraine's battle-scarred east. And in 2017, Swedish neo-Nazis carried out a bomb attack on a refugee house in Gothenburg. According to reports, the attackers had received paramilitary training from the ultra-nationalist Russian group that recruited and trained volunteers to fight for the separatists. The extremists have been drawn into the conflict through a savvy recruiting network that appeals to like-minded radicals on social media and in real-world meetups, establishing the conflict as a major rallying cause for far-right networks around the globe. And that the presence of Russian fascists, in some cases on the separatist side, some cases actually fighting against the ethnic Russians on the separatist side. We're going to talk later in future shows about Yakiism and the possibility, if Putin ultimately goes down, of a fascist Russia hooking up as part of what Francis Parker Yaki viewed as the Imperium. That, however, in future programs. The Azov Battalion in particular has produced ISIS-like propaganda videos, distributed pamphlets at neo-Nazi concerts in Western Europe, and sent speakers to far-right conferences in Scandinavia. Though the group denies it is neo-Nazi and publicly stated in 2014 that, quote, only 10-20% of its forces identified as neo-Nazis, its first commander and now leader of its political wing has a history in neo-Nazi groups. Their spokesperson is Roman Svarich, the personal secretary to Yaroslav Stetsko, as I mentioned in our last show, who was the wartime head of state in the Nazi collaborationist government in Ukraine. Continuing, the Azov's recruitment efforts have targeted far-right networks, including explicit pitches of the war, as an opportunity to gain battlefield experience that can be passed on to militants at home. There's a worldwide concern across the far-right about European countries losing their white majorities through immigration, unquote, Marilyn Mayo, M-A-Y-O, senior research fellow at the Anti-Defamation League's Center on Extremism, told Vice News, quote, there's a sense that there's a battle brewing to preserve white European culture, and that's where the desire for learning combat skills comes in, unquote. Joachim Furholm, F-U-R-H-O-L-M, a Norwegian neo-Nazi and recruiter for the Azov Battalion, used an interview with a U.S. white nationalist outlet last year to encourage U.S. extremists to join him. Quote, I came to lead a small group of volunteers from all over the West, gain some military experience, and hopefully to be able to send some of these guys back home to pass on their skills and their knowledge, he told Radio Werewolf. In the interview, uncovered by the investigative website Bellingcat, Furholm said their efforts would also help white nationalist forces in the one country where he believed they had the best shot of coming to power. Quote, it's like a petri dish for fascism, and they do have serious intentions of helping the rest of Europe in retaking our rightful lands, unquote. Speaking of Ukraine, and we're going to talk about the Ukraine of the Intermarium concept and the world island and geopolitics in future programs. Continuing. Experts estimate hundreds, if not thousands, of far-right foreign fighters have participated in Ukraine's war, fighting on both Ukrainian nationalist and pro-Russian separatist sides of a conflict that has seethed since Kremlin-backed separatists rose up in 2014. Kasper Rekavec, R-E-K-A-W-E-K, head of defense and security programs at Slovakia's Globsec think tank, said some recruits have seemed indifferent about which side they actually fought on. Quote, sometimes it's a matter of accident whether a fighter ends up on side A or side B, said Rekavec, who has extensively interviewed foreign fighters. They, again, quoting, they just want to take themselves to war, get this rush of adrenaline, unquote. The fighters apply a dizzying array of ideological lenses to the conflict to justify their involvement on either side. Those who joined the Ukrainian far-right militia typically saw themselves as supporting fellow European ultra-nationalists against Russian aggression. Rekavec said the Swedish neo-Nazis who joined on the Ukrainian side saw it as essentially, quote, the continuation of the Second World War on the Eastern Front. You are white Europe, and you're fighting Asia in the form of Russia, unquote. In some truly baffling instances, extreme-right Russians fought alongside Ukrainian nationalists against separatist forces backed by the Kremlin, he said. Meanwhile, far-right foreign fighters who joined pro-Russian separatists saw the battle as defending the separatists' right to self-determination against Western imperialism. Many were also drawn by a sense of allegiance to Vladimir Putin, lionized by many on the far right as one of the last defenders of a white traditionalist Christian Europe. Quote, on the pro-Russian side, there didn't seem to be such a coherent ideological agenda, said Sarah Meager, M-E-G-E-R, a lecturer in international relations at the University of Melbourne. While most of the foreign fighters on the Ukrainian side were on a spectrum from right to extreme right, those backing the separatists found themselves fighting alongside a significant number of far-left foreign volunteers who shared their view of the conflict as, quote, a struggle against U.S. hegemony, unquote. Rekavec said the divided loyalties of the far-right when it came to the Ukraine conflict meant that colleagues from the far-right scene in Europe often wound up on opposing sides of the front lines. These guys, quote, these guys all know each other from before, he said. Carolus Lofroos, C-A-R-O-L-U-S, last name capital L-O-F-R-O-O-S, a 30-year-old Finnish, Swedish, Jewish, dual national who also fought for Azov in 2015 and 2017, told Vice News that he had a cordial relationship with a couple of acquaintances who fought for the opposing side. Quote, sure, I think they're effing dumb, he said, but at least they're acting on what they believe is right, even if they're exposed to danger in doing so, which is something I can respect. LeFou said while his opinions had, quote, always been on the right side of the spectrum, unquote, he considers himself apolitical and rejected the suggestion that Azov had neo-Nazi politics. Quote, I don't care if people call me far-right Nazi or whatever. I wanted to fight, and Azov was at the time the soundest choice of a unit to aim at for doing so. For many far-right foreign fighters drawn to Ukraine, the outcome of the war is almost a secondary consideration to other more compelling pull factors. Rakowicz said Ukraine fulfilled the need expressed by many ideologues on the extreme right for a, quote, safe space, unquote, for Nazis outside the West, where they could network and organize beyond the prying eyes of domestic security services. Some, like LeFou's, simply wanted to fight. Speaking of his return to the battlefield outside Donetsk in 2017, the former soldier described it in terms that made it sound like a gap year or working holiday. Quote, I returned to see some old friends, see how the war progressed, and do some fighting for strictly recreational purposes, he told Vice News. War is like a philosophy and science that is pleasant to study, unquote. Through the influence of Azov in particular, Ukraine has increasingly played just such a role, emerging as a key hub in a transnational extreme right network. Since first forming in 2014 as a volunteer militia commanded by the former leader of a neo-Nazi party, with members drawn from the hooligan scene, Azov has developed into an increasingly powerful three-headed beast. Olena Semyonaka, Azov's international secretary, boasted last year that the movement had, quote, become a small state within the state, unquote. Alongside the battalion, which has been formally incorporated into Ukraine's national military, it also boasts a political wing and a vigilante street movement which has been linked to attacks on pride events and Romani camps. The U.S., which provides military support to Ukraine, has officially banned Azov from receiving any military aid due to its white supremacist ideology. They have apparently gotten some aid from U.S. trainers and from the Pentagon. Azov, which did not respond to Vice News' requests for comment, has also cultivated strong links with far-right political groups across Europe. Researchers say the movement now plays a role in a dangerous extremist network drawing new recruits from neo-Nazi mixed martial arts and hooligan scenes. Its influence has extended as far as the U.S. In 2018, three members of the violent California-based white nationalist group Rise Above movement traveled to meet with Azov representatives during a contact-building tiki tour across the European far right, even participating in a cage fight at an Azov-affiliated fight club. Skilt, who today lives in Kiev, has since publicly renounced his far-right allegiances. But he says the war's impact on foreign fighters should not be underestimated. Quote, just having that experience makes you more dangerous, he said. If you've been under fire, you have enough training, then you'll react on basic instinct. Unquote. And I would note the following as we take a look at what Congress is doing. This also from Vice News of October 16th of 2019 by Tess, O-N-T-E-S-S, last name O-W-E-N. House Democrats just demanded these neo-Nazi groups be prosecuted as international terrorists, unquote. In response to the growing global threat of white nationalist terror, House Democrats are calling on the U.S. State Department to add three international far-right groups to its list of foreign terrorist organizations. This is significant. Since September 11th, The State Department's terror designation system has been overwhelmingly focused on the threat posed by jihadi extremism like Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Adding international far-right groups to their list could give federal prosecutors more tools to go after radicals suspected of conspiring with those organizations before an attack happens. On Wednesday, New York Representative Max Rose, who chairs the Counterterrorism Subcommittee, submitted a letter to the State Department co-signed by 39 members of Congress. It urged the department to designate Azov Battalion, a far-right paramilitary regiment in Ukraine, some paramilitary, it's military, National Action, a neo-Nazi group based in the UK, and Nordic Resistance Movement, a neo-Nazi network from Scandinavia, as terrorist organizations. Now, skipping down. There is currently no domestic terror statute in the U.S. To charge a person with terrorism, prosecutors have to prove that they're affiliated with one of the 67 groups labeled as a foreign terror organization by the State Department. The attacks at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand in March was a major turning point for the way experts approach white nationalist terror. The shooter, a white nationalist from Australia, shared a manifesto online that was replete with memes and ideas trafficked by far-right extremists around the globe. The manifesto was titled The Great Replacement, which is a white nationalist conspiracy theory drawn from a book by a French author and the inspiration behind the chance of You Will Not Replace Us heard at the violent rally in Charlottesville 2 years ago. By the way, Steve Bannon is a big fan of that particular book. And I would note that Azov has been implicated in a number of violent incidents outside of Ukraine. The Soufan Center has identified ties between the Christchurch shooter Brenton Tarrant and Azov. The gunman had traveled to Ukraine in the years prior to the attack, and he'd embellished his firearm with symbols associated with the regiment. Do note that. We will be coming back to Ukraine as an epicenter for a spreading worldwide fascist combatant phenomenon, I guess one could say, including, by the way, Russian fascists who can return home, joining a powerful fascist community in Russia. And if they can ever gain power in Russia, and if movements like the Alternative for Germany and the National Front in France and others, if they can ever come to power, we could see something along the lines of the Imperium, advocated by Francis Parker Yaki, a global, in particular, European-wide fascist movement opposed to Jews and the U.S. in particular. And, of course, they would have nuclear weapons since that would include Russia. However, we'll talk about that and the concept of the Imperium in future programs. We will be coming back to Ukraine, its geopolitical position, the world island, and the concept of the Intermarium in our next couple of programs. This, however, concludes For the Record program number 1097, Fascism, 2019 World Tour, Part 7, Azov on Our Mind, Part 3. This is being recorded on November 5th of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.